97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
Hello and welcome into the podcast exclusive of Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Thank you so much for downloading this podcast and joining us. I am Tony Colombo here with producer Carl Middleman.
New Chad.
New Chad, my partner Bo Matthews.
Happy birthday to Chad. It's Chad's birthday this week.
Oh yeah. That's a great call. We gotta get it.
You didn't remember that, Tony.
I didn't. I'm glad Carl reminded me. Bo is here, of course, and joining us, sticking around from the radio show this week, is our buddy Mike Marfell, the professional fisherman. Mike, thanks for putting a little OT in with us this week.
Oh, anytime, dude. I enjoy talking to you guys. Always.
I had to cut Bo off at the end of the radio show because we were out of time. We have lots of things that we want to talk to Mike about. So, Bo, you go ahead and go first. I apologize that we ran out of time on the radio show this week.
No, I grew up in Minnesota where in the wintertime we would ice fish. No ice fishing cabin or anything like that. We would just be on the ice, you know, cut a hole in the ice and fish. And it's so different here. We do ice over, and the last time I just found a video, the last time it iced over on my lake, pond, whatever, was 2014, so thick that it was I could get my four-wheeler on there, although my wife on the shore was watching me as I went around the pond, and she's like, I can see it moving. I'm like, I don't care, I'm having a blast. So with the cold snap that we've got coming up in the next week here from the time of this recording, I wonder how long it's going to take for it to get to be like 4 inches so you can get on it. Any idea?
I would say it's a formula. I mean, is it going to be cold and sunny? Is it going to be cold, sunny, and windy? Because wind makes it hard for that stuff to freeze. It could be 2 weeks, and I'm still not getting. I'm freaked out by it. Honestly, yeah. I don't like.
Are you really? Have you ever ice fished?
Yeah, to a degree. Or else I'm in Minnesota now. I'm Minnesota. I go snowmobiling. Well, I used to go every year. Now we go every couple of years, and I don't have a problem because it's been that cold for months.
Right. Have you ever ice fished, Mike?
I have. When I was a kid, it was a small pond, probably a quarter acre, and it didn't take much to freeze it. And I never caught anything. I just wanted to say I'd done it.
Right.
I didn't even have an auger. I was using an axe like an idiot. I was out there smacking it.
Right.
Bo, how many times did you do it growing up, Bo? Was it like a regular activity?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. As a kid, like junior high, high school, we had a lake nearby our house that, you know, me and buddies would just go out there and hang out and fish. So it was an every winter event. But
did you do the whole thing, like put a tent up and chairs in the tent?
No,
just out in the...
I've never done that.
Yeah.
They've even got Airbnb.
That's a pretty recent
cabins.
Phenomenon, actually. The whole fancy ice house is a pretty recent, not recent, but in the last 10, 15 years.
Right.
Well, the Airbnb style.
Oh, you're about my age, right? I'm 50, so you're in the ballpark, maybe a little less. More.
Absolutely.
Back then it was a totally different game. Now, man, they got electronics they use. You're using
TVs.
Fish finders and augers and heaters and TVs and
satellite. Yeah. That's true. But the ice house, you know, the ice fishing house, you know, that, you know, you would pop up like a tent or something, like you said, Tony.
Right.
Those have been around for decades.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, it's kind of like deer hunting stands. You know, they would just put them out there just to get out of the wind. But now you can go on, I think you can go on Airbnb, like on Mille Lacs Lake, which is a lake you cannot see across. So they call it the Angry Lake. When that thing freezes over, you drive your truck onto that lake to go to where you're going to your hut. It's just tremendous, the business that they've done.
Huh.
And I've got friends here from this area that go up there for it because it's that fun.
That's awesome.
I got friends that go up in the summertime because the smallmouth fishing is out of this world.
Yeah. Are you fishing for a particular species? Is it like you're going for the bass, or like you're fishing on the ice? So anything you can get is a win.
Pretty much.
That would be my theory.
Experience.
If you get a bite, Well, and I think it's a loss, right? It's time away from drinking beer if you have to deal with landing the fish. So.
Well, normally if you're trying to catch a bass, you're staying up on the top, but wouldn't, if you're ice fishing, you have to go down farther,
it depends,
right?
Yeah. It depends on, the bass can be low or down low sometimes as well.
Trout,
northern, absolutely.
Yeah. They're all up there, yeah.
Most of them are all kind of suspended. They're above the, there'll be a thermocline. The water's a little warmer up higher. So most of them will be up there.
Right.
They're not going to be right underneath the ice, you know.
No. So
they're going to be down a little ways.
a moment, a little lesson here for everybody as they're listening to Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. After the show and before we started recording this podcast, we were talking off the air about lakes and ponds, and we were discussing what is the difference. When does a pond become a lake? And Mike, I like your theory a lot. You said an old timer told you once what the difference was. Can you?
It was an old timer. I think he was maybe a guy I used to duck hunt with when I was a kid. And I asked him that same question. He said, if you can set in any one place and see the entire shoreline, that's a pond. And if you can't, then it's big enough to be a lake, meaning it's got an arm or a finger, bends around out of sight. So
right.
I don't know. I don't know if that's true, but it makes sense to me.
It makes sense to me too. And I like that. I actually like that better than the actual definition, which I looked up. So just, just so you have a little trivia here that you can impress your friends with, lakes are normally much deeper than ponds and have a larger surface area. All the water in a pond is in the photic zone, P-H-O-T-I-C, the photic zone, meaning ponds.
I'm not even sure what that means.
It means that
probably meaning the grass can grow on the bottom I was just guessing. It's shallow enough.
Well, I'll explain it. Meaning ponds are shallow enough to allow sunlight to reach the bottom. Lakes have aphotic zones, which are deep areas of water that receive no sunlight, preventing plants from growing. You were exactly right. So it actually sounds like the actual shoreline surface area doesn't have anything to do with it. How deep it is. So if a body of water is not deep enough to have any area where the sunlight doesn't reach the bottom, then it's a pond, no matter how big it is. And if it has areas in it where it is deep enough, it's a lake. At least that is according to
Google. And I bet a lot of that has to do with the ponds that were dug, what I consider a cattle pond. It's for where the cows go in to cool off. They're all shallow little saucers. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I'm picturing.
So
my lake, I've found 15 feet. That's the deepest I've found in my pond, lake.
Well, then you probably got a lake, because if it's a little bit cloudy, there's not grass growing at 15 feet. I wouldn't think.
Yeah.
Start calling
my catfish
a lake.
Starved, and they're not down there anymore.
No,
remember?
They didn't starve. That's not what happened.
Probably because it was too deep, Bo. They couldn't get any grass.
That's not what happened to those catfish.
And then they grew legs and they walked away.
Did I ask you that?
What's that, Mike?
Bo, did you have catfish, like the automatic feeders, or did you feed your catfish?
No, I fed them. And they knew when I was approaching
the
shore.
Yeah,
when I approached the shore, they would come to me. They could hear me walking. We called them our guard fish, because from where we live, we can see the whole pond. And if it was churning over on the far end of the pond, that meant somebody was over there. And that's why we call them our guard fish.
And then somebody caught
them. You know,
them
a story along that line, Bo and Tony and Carl, a friend of mine, and he has a podcast out of California for bass fishermen. And those lakes they stock those lakes with rainbow trout.
Yeah.
And they finally had to start moving where they were dumping, because the bass would all congregate when that beeper would start going off of that truck.
Oh, wow.
Put them in the same area, and the bass were just annihilating the rain. So what they started doing was putting bigger and bigger trout in. Well, bigger and bigger bass started showing up. And that's when the whole swim bait craze came, where guys were like, oh, wow, I can throw an 8 or 10 inch rainbow trout swim bait and catch the biggest, catch bass on it.
Wow.
Yeah. They're just engorging these 8 inch trout that they're dumping in these lakes. So bass are not, if you start dumping on a regular basis, they're kind of going to show up.
Yeah. So Mike, we were talking on the show this week about what you're doing right now this time of year, kind of gearing up for the new season. I wanted to ask you, going into this season, I know that you are a big Lake of the Ozarks person. That's one of the lakes that you fish in a lot. And myself, same for me. Have you noticed, as we have gone through the pandemic and everything else over the last year or so, we've heard from people on this show that, a lot of people are being kind of reintroduced to the great outdoors because so many things were closed, or they, you know, it was safer. If you were going to do activities, it was better to be outside, and it was better to be able to spread out. And so people were finding parks again and lakes and fishing and all that sort of stuff. Our friends from Bluff City Outdoors, Mark was on with us a few weeks ago, and he talked about what a big year it was and how it had been, you know, for decades, it had kind of been a slow decline, and then suddenly it was a big spike. Have you noticed that out on the big lakes like Lake of the Ozarks? Are there more fishermen out now than ever?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, 100% it's noticeable. And it's more noticeable for a guy like me that gets down to practice on, you know, a lot of guys, you know, they're called weekend anglers for a reason, right? Mm-hmm. They have to work during the week. Well, mm-hmm. you know, if I've got a tournament on the weekend, a lot of times I like to get down there on a Wednesday, Thursday and kind of practice. And I noticed way more fishermen out on the water in the middle of the week.
I agree.
I don't know whether it was because their flexible work schedule working from home or, you know, maybe they got laid off and they're like, screw it, let's go fishing. You know, and along those lines, one of my buddies that works at or owns a boat dealership, it's a good year for selling boats.
Yeah.
It's the best year they've had in a while.
I agree completely, though, because I, you know, I only got to do it maybe once or twice this past year where I was able to stay at the lake through a couple of weekdays instead of being there on the weekend. And it used to be, and I mean like 2 years ago, if you were at the Lake of the Ozarks, even in the heart of the season, in the middle of the summer, if you're there on a Tuesday or Wednesday, it was you could go out and you know your little bass boat and fly around that lake and not have to worry about the big boats and the big wakes and all that. But the couple times that I had an opportunity to do that this past year, you know, it was still obviously 1,000 times better than the weekends. But there was a lot more boats on the water through the week than there ever was that I can ever remember before. And I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. What do you think? Is it a good thing or a bad thing that there are so many more people out there fishing?
I mean, I think a lake the size of Lake of the Ozarks can handle that kind of pressure.
Yeah.
And it would be a great thing if nobody fished, right? I mean, and then except for us fishermen. You know what I'm saying? Except for the tournament on the weekend. But I don't think you can – I don't really think – most bass fishermen aren't keeping the fish to begin with as long as they're – you know. So yeah. I don't think it really harms anything. It makes it tougher on the fishermen because those fisher get a little – they're smart in a respect, and I wouldn't say smart like they're thinking cognitively, but they're going to be a little reluctant to bite again after they've been yanked to the surface by the face.
Yeah. So, right.
That's my same theory. Too many people is too much. My theory on shopping at wholesale clubs, which I'm a new Costco member, and I figured out, I've been every day of the week, you know, throughout my shopping experience, Tuesdays, nobody's in the place, so that's my day.
And now they will be.
Right.
Due to the popularity of the 2-8 and the great outdoors. Boom on Tuesdays.
We've got to do this show.
I looked up a little statistic.
Yeah, let's hear it.
We've always talked about how many docks are at Lake of the Ozarks, right? So for whatever reason, it's pretty hard to find the actual number. And we can all have conspiracy theories on why Ameren may or may not want you to know exactly how many they got. But I found an article from the Washington Post, and it was done in 2006, and it estimated 25,000 docks, which sounds pretty low to me.
Yeah.
But then I found an article from Ameren that the number of annual permit applications has grown from 900 a year in 1990 to more than 3,000 a year. That's new acquisitions.
Wow.
And that was an article from 2019.
Wow.
So if you think 3,000, let's just say it was 1,500 a year, right?
Yeah.
Since 1990, just goes in the middle. That's a lot of new docks since 1990.
No kidding.
1,500 a year.
Yeah, but and how many are replacing well their old docks?
That's not slips.
Right.
That's not slips. That's docks. So,
yeah, Carl makes a good point. How many of those do you think? Well, a lot of times, and if you're building a new dock, unless you're putting it in the exact same spot, unfortunately, those old docks just stay there.
Right.
So you are just adding another dock on the water.
Because you've been to the Lake of the Ozarks. You see, there's dilapidated docks that they just abandoned.
Yeah, all over the place. No doubt.
Oh, yeah. They're getting less and less. But, yeah, you can't put a dock like that in. No more styrofoam. You know, it has to be the plastic flotation and all that. But Carl, when you see one of those old dilapidated ones with the styrofoam, fish it. Because that styrofoam, for whatever reason, grows algae so good. It always has a lot of bait and bluegill down there feeding on that algae.
And there's the always flotsam and jetsam right by it. It's just, it's a place you don't want to be, but that's probably where the fishing's the best.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have got to do this show from the lake this year. Mm-hmm. We got to make this happen, gosh. Bo. We got to get down. We got to do this show from the lake. Mike, find us a sponsor. It will all go down.
We can do that. Margaritaville. Can we do that?
Yeah.
That's fine. Yeah. That's fine.
That's right next to where I stay. I stay in that cove behind Tantera Island.
We can go out.
Island now.
We'll fish. We'll fish on my boat and
record.
And Carl will tape the whole thing.
Have a mini tournament.
Yeah, Carl will tape the whole thing.
I got a better idea.
Mm. Yeah,
hold on. Better idea. Better idea.
Let's hear.
Rent a houseboat.
Ooh.
And then we all get on that and we travel around and we fish and we party and we whatever on a houseboat. Have you rented one down there? It's fantastic.
I've never rented a houseboat.
I've never rented one there.
Maybe the station
will pay for it. I've been wanting too bad.
Probably not.
You should try it at Bull Shoals, Bo, because you won't see anybody. You can be on that boat in the middle of the week and not see a soul.
Can you fish off a houseboat? Can you really fish off a houseboat, though?
You can fish anywhere.
Of course.
Yeah, but you can't get close enough to the... You can't get close enough to the docks.
If you've got a cabin on the water, you can fish from your dock or your deck, right?
Yeah, but you want to be able to get up close.
You can tie my bass boat up to the side of it.
There you go. That's exactly. That's what I'm thinking too. That's exactly.
The houseboat will hold the
beer. Generator. We can charge the batteries, and we're good to go.
There you go.
Mike, when does your season start, and when is, in your opinion, the sort of where we turn the corner, where we go from the wintertime and you know the kind of tougher fishing that you see in the winter, or the different style at least that you have to take, to you know, things kind of getting back to normal? When do we cross that line?
February 20th is when we turn the corner, because that's my first tournament at Table Rock. And I told you guys that last on the radio that the fishing's been good down there all year. A lot of the guides and my friends down there that live down there will tell you that winter is their favorite time to fish Table Rock by far. You know, it's clear, it's deep, the fish gang up. So, but honestly, for the really, when the pre-spawn really starts kicking up in March, mid-March is when it gets a little easier. You know what I'm saying? It gets just a little bit easier. Their water's warming up. They're feeling frisky. And love is in the air. And that's when it starts to get a little better. But I'm going to run down my schedule.
Yeah, I wanted to hear it. Yeah, please do.
This is why I don't fish much when it's not go time.
Mm-hmm.
Because I want to stay married. So my first tournament's a BFL at Table Rock February 20th. February 28th, the following weekend, I got a team tournament at Lake of the Ozarks. This year, I'm fishing the Toyota Series, which is the big boys. That is March 4th through the 6th.
Nice.
And then I turn around on March 13th at Lake of the Ozarks for another BFL. Then March 14th at Lake of the Ozarks for another team tournament. April 3rd at Lake of the Ozarks for a team tournament. Toyota Series at Grand Lake, Oklahoma on April 8th through the 10th. Then April 17th, I'm back at Table Rock for a BFL. Then May 2nd, I'm at Lake of the Ozarks again for a team. And then a Toyota Series at Lake Darnell, May 6th and 8th.
Where's Lake Darnell?
Break and I fish in June.
Where's Lake Darnell?
There's pretty much every weekend.
Yeah, where's Lake Darnell?
Lake Darnell is in Arkansas, on the Arkansas River, basically.
Gotcha.
Russellville, Arkansas, kind of northeast Arkansas.
Who's your teammate?
No, I'm sorry, northwest Arkansas.
Who's your teammate when you fish the team tournaments?
Greg Glant. He's another guy. He's another Fenton guy. He's a guy I met years ago, and I stay at his house down at the lake. He has a roofing company here, Glant Roofing in Fenton, or actually the shop's in Florissant, but Greg lives here. He's only a mile from me here in Fenton.
Nice.
And ironically, we met through fishing, and we've become good friends, and he's my team partner. Now, this Toyota Series, I'm getting closer to your moniker of professional fisherman, because this is the big boys. This is going from Springfield Cardinals to the Memphis Cardinals. This is AAA. The next step is full time, big time.
How do you qualify for that?
I didn't qualify for this. You just got to have a wallet or a sponsor. The entry fees are $1,700 bucks a pop. So, and it's a 3-day tournament. but the payouts are really good. So I'll be flat honest with the COVID. I struggled to find any sponsorship help. So anybody out there listening that wants to sponsor a local dude fishing tournaments.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
Call in and ask Tony.
You got that right.
But
hold on. Did you say sponsor a fishing dude? Is that what he said?
Yeah.
Yeah. Fishing dude.
Hold on. I think we should reference President Biden's new edict for using restrooms of opposite sex, because maybe there are some transgender fisher people out there.
How's he tying this in together? Oh, okay.
Bo, I am so sorry. The police, the woke police will come and tackle me. You're absolutely right.
I'm just saying. Is there not a women's fishing tournament or a person's fishing tournament now?
Women fish right alongside.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think it matters.
It's unisex.
Yeah, fishing tournaments.
We were the first one to include women right in with us. We didn't even have to be told by the government to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, great.
We welcome them right off.
Their trick is learning to pee off the boat. That is the.
that's one advantage. That's maybe one advantage.
I have a funny story I'll have to tell about that one time. But when I drew a woman as my amateur in a pro am one time, and she
that's
said,
the other
I've
podcast, Mike.
Now.
That's for the other podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
No. Let's do it now. She had to pee. What happened?
She had to pee, and I was like, she said, don't turn around. I said, no problem. And I said, well, you just holler at me when you're done, so I know I can look the other way if I need to.
Right.
And she said, okay, I'm done, you know, after a few minutes or whatever. And I was
like, she made it happen.
Made it happen. I was like, waited a few minutes, and I was like, you know, I got to ask. You didn't just pee in my live well, did you? Because I didn't hear any splitter spatter down there. And she said she pulled out of her bag what looked like a cup with a hose on it.
No kidding.
It was her sneaky leaker, and she would put that in her shorts and then run the thing into the lake and just squat down there. And she goes, and she had a little Ziploc bag back there.
That's brilliant for guys too, because you know,
Lake of the Ozarks, because it feels like you're peeing in somebody's living room half the time.
Yeah, there's so many people around that you can't, you know, you can't find that private area where nobody, you know, can see you. So
can I share a quick story?
Yeah, please do.
Okay, so my daughter served in the U.S. Army in the big push going into Iraq from Kuwait. She's there for like 3 or 4 months. We communicate once every other week. And so I'm like, what do you need? What do you need? Oh, Cheez-Its and Tang and, you know, for the bad water and any kind of meat sticks. And I was like, okay. I said, anything else? I said, what's the worst part of being out there? She goes, as a female in the military, you got to take 80 pounds of stuff off just to take a leak. And right away, I go on to Google back in the day, and I punched in woman standing peeing, and they had a thing called a whizzy, and it's a plastic coated.
I'm sure they had a lot of other things that came up too when you Googled that.
I know. But I sent her a case of these things overseas, and it was like currency. All the females were like, oh my gosh, I'll trade you my blah 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 for this. And there, matter of fact, I was just cleaning out my truck the other day, and I've got one for my wife in my glove box, and it's never been used, but it's a throwaway deal. So similar to what you were saying,
you
Mike,
go.
That technology is out there.
Man, I hate to see when you're...
God bless female truck drivers, right, Bo? I have a sneaking suspicion that's where that came from.
Exactly.
I'd hate to see the ads that were popping up as you were surfing the internet after you made that Google search.
The fact that your brain went there just scares
me. Two girls, one cup.
All right. And on that note, that'll do it for this week's edition of the podcast exclusive. But seriously, Mike, before we wrap it up, I know you mentioned it on the radio show. Tell people how they can follow you on social media, keep up with everything that you guys are doing.
Well, my buddy, the Tin Horse, Monty, his YouTube channel, he will follow me on every one of those tournaments that I mentioned. He will be my link and my travel partner, and we will be documenting all those pro-ams and the Toyota series this year on his YouTube channel, Tin Horse Monty. And please go check them out on Monday nights. Their Monday Night Live thing is awesome. They have different pros, people from the industry, fish biologists, and it sometimes goes 3 hours. It goes Joe Rogan long sometimes, and you can comment in when it's live and ask questions.
I've done it.
It's a really great format.
Yeah, it is. It's really cool. I've done it. I've watched and asked questions during the stream, and you know, you guys reply to all those questions right away. It's really cool. Are you doing it every Monday? Are you going to be on anytime soon? Or?
No, I'm going to be. I think I'm coming up. I think Gabe reached out to me, and I'm not sure the date. I usually just rely on him to holler at me, you know, a week before or something and let me know. But good I'm stuff. Coming up. But man, they've had some really good. They have one guy, Tony, you might like. Anybody looking for a new boat, he has a YouTube channel where he takes out different bass boats, all the different makes, mostly in the 20 or 21-foot range, and goes through them. And they had him on a couple of weeks ago, and it was very interesting, the different, you know, giving you his different take on not only how the boat performed, but how it fished as far as how the compartments were laid out and all that sort of stuff. So that, you know, it's not just fishing, it's that. They've had marine biologists, but lots of local pros. Myself, and he's getting bigger and bigger names. He's had some Elite Series guys on there in the last couple episodes. Mark Menendez was one of them. So, yeah, it's a very interesting format. Very
nice.
Interesting format.
Yeah, no,
and
really
they
cool.
keep growing and growing. They keep growing and growing with that. But we're going to monitor with the 10 horse. It'll be our practice. And like I said, that Toyota Series, that's a 3-day tournament. So that's going to be a pretty cool video. You know, Gabe won't be fishing in my boat during the tournament. He'll draw another pro. But,
right.
We're going to try to do some more of hillbillies at the square table when we get back and talk about what how our day went and stuff.
Man,
and,
this time of year, you know, it's like I just am craving getting out there. And,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Now I can't stop thinking about doing the show. We got to find a way to do the show down there mm-hmm. and fish yeah. together. And yeah, and you know,
yeah,
I said.
Out.
I said Carl would film it, but actually we could do like we could do two
live.
On two.
Ten horse with us, he'll film it.
We could do two on
yeah.
two.
Mm-hmm.
We could. Yep. You know, I don't know who gets Mike. That's
me and
be
Carl
a...
one day. That's how we do.
Oh, rotate
it. Format.
Uh-huh.
It's
yeah.
me and Carl one day, and then me and Bo the next. We just switch.
Oh, okay. And I just get I just get left out. Yeah. I see how that works.
Thanks, Mike.
Well, you got a boat. You got a boat. We can make it a 3-day. Hey, Tony, you
right.
always ask me
That's
about
right.
what to try to throw, and I thought about this. Most people are in the wintertime think smaller, lighter, slink slower
yeah.
kind of jig. You know, that is so true if you're trying to catch numbers. If you're looking to catch the biggest bass this time of year, put a half-ounce jig on with a big fluffy rubber skirt or a living rubber skirt. Trim it right at the back of the hook. Use your same big trailer on that, a craw type trailer,
mm-hmm.
and just throw it. You want to go. What you want to do is you want to go find points leading into spawning coves, preferably on the north side because they're going to get the most sun this time of year and they're going to get that south wind. They're going to be the first ones to become quote unquote active.
Yeah, but you don't have
jig.
To slow
I mean,
it.
You want to count every rock as you're dragging it on the bottom. Just barely move it when you touch
okay.
a rock.
Yeah.
Stop it and just let it set there.
That's awesome.
Because big bass are looking for, they're not looking to chase something. They're looking to have one big meal.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have, you know, you can catch smaller. You might catch a big one on that, but on a smaller jig, but your best chances of catching a big bass this time of year is on a big swim bait going real slow towards the bottom or a giant, and I say giant, but a big, fluffy mm-hmm. half-ounce jig, just like you would throw in the summertime, but you just got to crawl it super slow.
You got to pretty much hit them in the face with it, right?
Well, they'll come and find it, but they're not going to rush over to get it.
Yeah.
So if you're moving it slow, that's why a lot of guys use a trailer that has a more of a waving action, like a traditional old pork grinder or plastic chunk. I still use the kind with the flappers because it displaces enough water for them to, you know, their lateral lines for them to feel it. And they'll get their attention. It's just going to take them a while to get there because, you know, being cold-blooded, they're not going to rush over there.
Yeah.
But they're more likely to want to have one big meal on a big gizzard shad or a big crawdad than to chase around a bunch of little minnows.
That's great
or a
information.
A bunch of little bitty crawdads.
Yeah, that is great
so if you're looking
information.
To catch a big one, that's how to do it.
What's the depth range that's, like, perfect for that?
This time of year, probably 15 to 20, 25
yeah.
maybe. And you want, like I said, you want to find a point, a main lake point with preferably if a channel swings in close to it, that's a north facing pocket that's got a bunch of that where they'd want to spawn, that shallow flat pea gravel in the back of it.
Well, listen, everybody,
be out there in the winter.
We just found out that Bo's lake is 15 feet deep, so it's
uh-huh.
Perfect time to head on out to Bo's house.
No, it's a private lake. No, oh, please do not do that. It's a private lake. It's a private lake, and I've got a scope on my rifle, and I can reach it.
Thanks to Razorback Armory.
Yeah, buddy.
There you go. You get those different colored paint dots for your ranges painted on the back of your trees, like I told you, Bo. Right? That's where you know what ranger in it.
There ain't no fish in that lake anyway. So, all right, that's gotta wrap it up, Mike Marfell.
Yeah, don't
thank
waste
you.
Your time.
Thanks so much, guys, and hey, you guys be safe out there and. After one of these long runs, let's do it again, Tony, after the first
Toyota series.
For sure.
Yeah, we'll get you back on in a few weeks after your first tournament or two and check in and see how it's going.
That sounds perfect. I appreciate it, buddy.
All right, you bet. That is Mike Marfell.
See you, Mike.
Thank you so much for joining us.
See you, Carl.
Bye, Mike.
And thank you so much for downloading the podcast exclusive this week. If you haven't already, please download the show's podcast as well and look for both of our podcasts that we put out each and every week, one on Friday and one on Monday. I am Tony Colombo. Thank you so much for listening. For Carl Middleman and Bo Matthews, we'll see you back here next week for another edition of Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors.
See you, boys.
Peace and bacon grease.
He's still there.
Yeah,
he's still
awesome.
Sitting in his boat, in his garage.
Awesome, guys. Thank you.
And stop.